So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Right here at the MBM Radio Network. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm your host, Ed Springsteen of the Ed Springsteen Show, one of the many shows here at MBM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com as well. When you guys visit the website, check all the stories we're researching and all the other stuff. Make sure you join the RSS feed and the email newsletter and have our stories sent directly to you. You will probably like that. It will definitely make your life easier. And helps us out a lot. And, oh, by the way, while you're there, try to click on one of our sponsors. Our sponsors actually help pay for the show. We get paid on the clicks, not what you buy. So make sure you click on that, please. In the meantime, it looks like Mr. Martin will be just a minute or two late, which isn't uncommon on Tuesday nights. Tuesdays are a pretty heavy, busy day for him at the business that he runs that Barack Obama built for him. So, with that in mind, and actually, speaking of the devil, here he is now. Hello, Mr. Martin. How are you, sir?
I am not the devil.
You are the devil. You are the devil. You're either a liberal in disguise, or a fence-sitting politician, so that makes you a devil. It has to.
I am not a devil. I may play devil's advocate often, but... maybe sometimes I am a devil. I'll give you that.
You know, we all are a devil sometimes or another, my friend. That's just something we have to deal with. In the meantime, you know, glad you're here. I tell you, I want to go ahead and get started. You know we're going to get onto the Martin Zimmerman garbage. You started a crazy-ass Facebook post today that everybody and their brother is arguing over. So we'll probably end up on that as much as I'm trying.
That's not crazy. That's actually a good post when you get people going at it. and they're not insulting each other. You know,
actually, I agree with you there, because that is one thing about it. Nobody was insulting. It was actually a rational discussion, and I was going to point that out. But we'll get into that in a few minutes, because right now we have a lot going on here locally. Barbara Shanklin, her trial started today. Did you see all of I hear you laughing already. Did you see all that going on? And by the way, I've got to apologize for all the dogs you hear in the background, folks. I run my office and do the show straight from my house, and I guess somebody decided to show up and knock on my door. I've got a great alarm system, but apparently it's been taken care of. So anyway, you know, the Barbara Shanklin case, I hear you laughing already, Ed, and it's totally it is a laughable case. I mean, did you see Aubrey Williams today?
I haven't. Well, obviously I've been working, but I've been catching some commentaries on it, and, you know, aside from the commentaries, I can only imagine, you know, I wasn't going to sit down and watch it per se as it was streaming, but it's like, I can only imagine how ridiculous, given the initial hearing, how ridiculous it could degenerate too.
Well, it's totally fascinating to me. I was really stuck on one thing that he said, but they actually printed this in the Courier Journal, so let's give them some credit for this. You know, the opening argument by David Tishaw basically said that Barbara Shanklin did all of these things wrong. She's guilty. She needs to be held accountable. You know, the usual prosecutorial kind of stuff. But in the defense statement by Aubrey Williams, he stated, a person can do a wrong, but if there is no guilty intent, then they are not guilty. And that particular remark stuck out to me because of everything that's going on with the Zimmerman Martin crap that we'll get into in a little bit. But that particular remark stuck out to me. But here's the reality here, folks, and this is what nobody wants to say is going on. You know, Barbara Shanklin is accused of basically taking $29,000 in city money, our tax money, to fund an upholstery program for ex-offenders, for people, you know, convicts and felons and things like that coming out of jail. She actually attended.
You know, to pick up a trade that they could make a living for, and they have to do it through people like Barbara Shanklin because they kill the vocational type center that they were going to build downtown, right?
Yeah, well, you know what? You make a very valid point, sir. And that really is an issue because at the time she was trying to fund this and did, using $29,000 of our tax money was already paying for this. The jail itself, you know, corrections and stuff, already has a program like this that they try to teach offenders while they're in jail. So, you know, it was basically a program that really didn't need to be there anyway. What was interesting here was, though, Barbara Shanklin attended classes 15 times by her own admission and the sign-in sheets. Whether she attended or just signed her name on a sign-in sheet to try to make it look good, I don't know. But 10 times, she was the only person that was signed in and the only student. You know, so that's interesting there. That already is a problem, and that's one of the key reasons that Greg Fisher closed the program down, and you got to give Fisher credit for that. But what's really fascinating here, what nobody wants to focus on, is what I call the Judy Greene argument. And what that means is Barbara Shanklin went to the Metro Council and got $75,000 approved in council funds, again, our tax money, to be given to the Petersburg-Newburgh Improvement Association. Now, Judy Greene got a $50,000 grant for the 100 black men of Louisville, okay? But what's interesting here is Judy Greene was impeached for telling the 100 black men of Louisville where to send money to that was going to benefit her politically. They didn't get to spend the money as they chose. Judy Greene said, you're going to give it here or else, you know, so that she could get benefit for it, and then lied to everybody saying that she gave them the money. Barbara Shanklin, in this case, went above and beyond what Judy Greene did. Barbara Shanklin actually wrote 84 checks on the Petersburg-Newburgh Improvement Association that she chairs. She wrote and signed 84 checks involving the same $75,000 tax funds that she gave to them. You don't think there's anything wrong with this? It's incredible to me.
And that's what blows Aubrey Williams out of the water on that. It's like it's not like, you know, hey, look, sometimes, and it happened to me a couple times because my credit card and my company card look a lot alike, and I'd swipe it, and they'd say, what was this? And I go, oh, crap, you know, and they'd have to bill me back for it. If you screw up once or twice, Okay. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you've got it set up like that, if you're the only person attending a class, at some point you got to say, this is not what you would call a success. You know, shut it down. But no, this is over and over and over. She's done it. I mean, let's face it. You do 75 checks. If you got a book, that means you went through 3 or 4 books of checks.
And there's no doubt about it. And they actually, you know, they brought in as part of the evidence, you know, the canceled checks, receipts, and everything else. You know, in addition to that, you know, she's also been accused of giving Linda Haywood, the co-call class instructor, that's a friend of hers. She basically got paid twice for the same week, for the same work, I should say. You know, or she pocketed cash. Barbara Shanklin did, because Haywood supposedly went to Shanklin and asked for money to be loaned to her in advance. Shanklin gave her the money. Haywood says she gave the money to Shanklin and paid her back in cash, but Shanklin never reported that money or showed a deposit or anything else, and it went back into the Petersburg-Newburgh Improvement Association. So she pocketed the cash. That is one. This is what people need to understand about the way these idiot politicians work. They love to do that stuff. It's exactly one of the things that happened with the 100 Black Men grant with Judy Green. And this is every daggone Democratic politician out there, bar none. This isn't black politicians, folks. This is a liberal agenda at its best. There's white ones on it that are doing it, and we're in the middle of investigating them now, too. But that's what they do. They get these council funds. They get them given to a certain thing, like the 100 Black Men or the Petersburg-Newburgh Improvement Association. They tell these guys where to write the checks. These other organizations, they cash the checks. And then what happens? They give the cash to the politician. They split it with them. So they're getting cash put in their pocket off of your tax money. It's the biggest scam there is, totally illegal. And yet, miraculously, they never seem to come up on any criminal charges. Why is that, Ed?
Well, it's because, they're metering it out. I mean, we got Judy Green doing it, you know, and she got scapegoated pretty good. And now Barbara Shanklin's up. So, I mean, we're getting a few sacrificial lambs, but I think that's what you see. I think they're taking down the low-hanging fruit. I mean, like I say, we all saw Barbara Shanklin and her defending herself. It's just, and we've seen her try to lead a city council meeting before, and just simply not the sharpest tool in the shed. So I've said all along, somebody showed her the ropes. Like, look, here's how you do it. No way she can put it together herself, but they just don't, you know, they only do it when they only come down on it when somebody else exposes it, like Dan Klepper did, who unfortunately is no longer with the Courier Journal, but I do know that he's following it because I follow him, and he's following it from Atlanta because I think he's proud of his work, and he should be, but he's just. Until it surfaces, you know, they've got a system built. The cronyism, the family members and stuff, the politicians have it worked out to where they have people who, for the most part, can be trusted, and they're not going to talk because, you know, they could be implicated, too. I think they've just figured out how to tie it all up pretty good to where, you know, other people are going to be, you're going to be implicated if you implicate them. So that's their insurance, and, you know, it might be family members. It might be a little. I think they just somebody has over the years they've figured it out, and I think just like any human being, you know, once they get themselves a neat little trick, they want to show their friends, and then their friend, you know, they then want to teach their friends how to do it, and they just keep it knotted up pretty good. It's just like the development and everything else. There are people who can be trusted, or so you hope, to carry these things out with you.
Well, what's really fascinating here, too, because you bring up a lot of good points, and I'll tell you why. Because Aubrey Williams, as part of his daggone arguments today, said that the Metro Council knew that Barbara Shanklin was the one behind the Petersburg-Newburgh organization, yet they continued to fund it. So, you know, and what really happened there went above and beyond.
She continued to vote for their little pet projects, too.
Exactly. It's a scratch my hand, I'll scratch yours. In all honesty, this is nothing but pure karma. I mean, if you think about it, Barbara Shanklin went after Judy Green as hard as I did. She went after Judy Green as hard as I did, knowing that her own house was not in order, and she went public chastising Judy Green, and all of a sudden she got investigated, and oh, my God, what's going on? I just got caught.
Yep.
I should have kept my mouth shut. If she would have kept her mouth shut, nobody would have investigated her. I don't think they would have anyway, not right away. But what was really interesting with Aubrey Williams' comment about the Metro Council continuing to fund it, even knowing this, he actually singled out Tom Owen. And he said, Tom Owen has a doctorate degree.
Well,
right.
I'm just saying, it's like dominoes. Judy Greene, you know, Barbara went after her.
But why
Judy
Tom
Green,
Owen?
You know, a lot of people think Judy Greene had a little to do with this. It'll be real interesting to see how this vote goes down on her and to see if, you know, after she gets run out of town on a rail, see if she starts rolling over on some people from afar.
Right. And see, that's the thing, because why did she single out Tom Owen? Tom Owen is as corrupt and crooked as anybody on the council. I will tell you that right now. And I have to state this for the lawyers. In my opinion, Tom Owen is one of the most corrupt Democrats on the council. There you go. That'll keep the lawyers happy, because it's my opinion. But it's the truth.
Yeah.
Tom Owens is already involved
in serious... As far as opinions go, it would be my opinion that he's also one of the most well-connected on the city council, too. So.
Well, he is, because Tom Owens is tied to U of L and all these other entities. And it's fascinating, because Tom Owens is already being investigated by me and a whole host of other people because of some daggone land deals that I believe are fraudulent. I believe a fraudulent land deal that he's profiting off of the daggone our tax money on some fraudulent land deals. One of them includes the blood bank that was in the news just a year and a half ago, and we're still investigating that whole mess, and that's not the only mess. But I thought it was interesting that Aubrey Williams singled out Tom Owen and said that Tom Owen has a doctorate degree, and then he went on to ask him, are you that dumb, that oblivious, that you were duped for years and years? No, Tom Owens is part of the problem. Tom Owen has been funding Shanklin, because I guarantee you Owen has been getting something in return. His name was singled out of all the Democratic council members, and Aubrey Williams only chose to single out Tom Owen. There was a reason for that. There was a red flag saying, hey, check this white guy out.
Yeah, there was a
reason. And he's right.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him drop somebody else's name, too, because that is simply code for you're next.
Exactly. He just threw a bone to all of us. And you know, in all honesty, Owen is already under investigation, so that's not a big issue for me. You know, I'm already investigating the guy. But I found it very interesting that he threw him alone under the bus. You've got Jim King there, who we all know is guilty and crooked. I've already proven that in court. They just let him get away with it as usual, just gave him a little fine. Okay, and King is actually overseeing this thing. So, you know, you got a crook overseeing a crook. I've got a problem with that. You know, maybe that's just me, you know. But there's going to be a lot more coming down about Jim King being tied into Kevin Cosby, Greg Fisher, and all that other stuff in the next several parts that are coming up on the story I talked about last night. You know, we'll get into all that later. But, you know, it's very interesting that he threw Tom Owen out like that. So this case is supposed to last roughly 3 to 5 days. But I've got to be honest with you, this is cut and dry. This is probably a stronger case, in my opinion, and I admit fully I'm not an attorney, but I'm the one who challenged Judy Greene, I'm the one who challenged Jim King, I'm the one who fought this crap for years on both of them. In my opinion, based on what I've been through and the cover-ups and everything else that are involved, this case is clear-cut. This isn't a Judy Greene case. Barbara Shanklin led the neighborhood association that she funded with Metro Council's blessings, and she wrote the checks on that account. And she received cash from Linda Haywood. Linda Haywood's story is checking out. You know, I mean, Linda Haywood says that Shanklin advanced her some pay and that she paid Barbara Shanklin back in cash, but Barbara Shanklin can't produce a receipt whatsoever. And then we also have testimony from Linda Haywood. I'll have to look that up for you in just a second at the break. I've got it on another story I've done previously. But we've also got testimony from Linda Haywood that Barbara Shanklin was trying to tell her what to say in this investigation so that she wouldn't get caught. You know, that's disturbing. So this is going to be really interesting going forward. It's a story we need to pay attention to. And, you know, I'm really liking what's going on.
I think we're always against trying people in the court of public opinion, but
sure.
I think it's good that this one's out in the open like it is, being live streamed, being reported by, well, you know, everybody for a change. That as the details come out and stuff, and as they have come out, even the Democrats on the city council that might be inclined to protect her and in so doing protect themselves, they're going to have a hard time voting to not remove her from office just because they know everybody's watching, and that's the key. You know, if people are if it was closed door and it was just a little something, didn't make it to the paper, didn't make it to the broadcast news, then you know what, she'd probably keep getting reelected. But it's out there, so they're going to have to. They're not going to be able to sweep this under the rug, and that's where it gets interesting. Like you say, singles out Tom Owen. They're going to single. I would imagine they may single out a few more, just to very publicly but discreetly say, careful.
Well, the thing that really makes it interesting for me, when you get into this whole show, and I've said from the beginning, and I still believe it. I haven't seen anything that's changed my mind yet, even with all the evidence at hand. I think we're looking at a situation where Shanklin, something happens to her, but I think it's going to be short of impeachment. I really do. You got Aubrey Williams, who has already tried to subpoena Greg Fisher, and they won't allow him to be subpoenaed. You've got him calling out Metro Council members individually. There is a lot more here than meets the eye that we're aware of. And I tell you, if he's confident enough to send those warning shots across the bow, then there's something going on here that's going to protect her. I really believe that. I really do. It's going to be very interesting where it comes at, what's going to happen. But it's definitely going to be a tale of two different people, because Judy Greene should have been impeached and was. Barbara Shanklin makes Judy Greene's case look, minimal at best. And my belief is they're going to try to let her off. It's very interesting. But we've got other news here, man. We've got to talk about other stuff going on in this wonderful little place called Kentucky. Our good friend over at Page One Kentucky, Jacob Payne, I don't give Jacob a lot of credit, because there's a lot of things about Jacob I don't like. But I've always said that when Jacob does work, when he does real legitimate, down-to-earth, good, honest-to-goodness journalism, this guy's incredible, and it's awful hard to beat him at anything. And he did just the same thing yesterday. He put out a story yesterday on Page One talking about Heather French Henry. And this is a very interesting story, because Heather French Henry, as everybody knows, was acting like she was going to run for Senate seat and take on Ms. McConnell. We found out different because Heather French Henry knows she couldn't pull that off. But what makes it fascinating is Jake points out the obvious why. If Heather French Henry had to go through any kind of an investigation or anything else, which she knew she would with Ms. McConnell, one thing would be clear, that this whole Heather French Foundation for Veterans, Inc. is nothing but a scam. And I tell you why. Since 2002, when she incorporated the Heather French Foundation for Veterans, you go through and you look at all the money, and that's what Jake is really good at. He gets into all the details. In 2011, she reimbursed herself $4,000 for her contributions to employee benefit plans, but her organization didn't, receive any funds or pay any premiums on a personal benefit contract. So how is she reimbursing herself for something she never paid? And from the look of things, she hasn't really taken in any money, but she's certainly done a hell of a job paying for expenses for herself to make it look like she's credible. Jake did a great job on that. But I think that story is fantastic, because it shows one of the reasons that she stepped out. And there's a reason I bring all that up. We know that the Democrats are trying to set up Allison Lundgren Grimes for a bid against Mitch McConnell. She is going to be the Democratic choice candidate to take on Mitch McConnell. Well, what a lot of people don't understand about politics, Ed, and this is what I want you to articulate for me, is just how much the Democrats play these silly-ass games of infiltration and everything else to try to steal a seat without actually winning a seat. And when I say steal a seat, what I mean by that is somebody wants to get elected who really doesn't have the qualifications or the expertise to take a job. And in this case, that's Grime. So what they do is they pollute the field and do everything they can to make sure they can win by a minimal vote because of party loyalty, if you will. And I don't think it's any clearer that what's going on with Matt Bevin, as we talked about last night. Matt Bevin put out a press advisory today, stating, you know, putting out all the stops he's making. He's going on a statewide tour announcing his candidacy to run against Mitch McConnell. He's running as a Tea Party Republican conservative. But everything about this guy, as we noted last night, says he's nothing more than a liberal. And I think it really shows a big fracture within what the Tea Party is supposed to be about, if they're willing to support this guy who loves to take government handout money, as he did to rebuild his business at Bernie, Connecticut, because he didn't want to pay for insurance. Expand on that, if you will.
Well, again, the Tea Party, I look at that like I do the Occupy movement. It was so good when it started, but it got co-opted, and then it got co-opted. There were Tea Party factions, religious right. There were Tea Party factions that simply were Tea Party because, and they backed Republicans universally because they hated Democrats, you know? So, any more people call themselves a Tea Party candidate, I'm sure, and I think what we've got here is a phenomenon that's not entirely unlike some of the rabid factions of the Tea Party that absolutely hated Barack Obama. Illogically, in some cases, they were the ones, you know, would say they think about Bush, like, miss me yet? And was like, well, no, because we're all doing the exact same thing you are. You did. So I think in most cases, I don't know that he, you know, we got a guy like John Kemper. We talk about John from time to time. Now, there's a guy, he's hardcore Tea Party. And there are ones out there. I'd say, you know, David Adams goes that route to a degree. But I think this is, in some cases, more a revolt against Mitch McConnell and his perceived big government neocon, Republican. He's an old guard Republican, you know, the ones that vote for NDAA, the ones that vote for CISPA, the ones that vote for prescription, you know, Part D Medicare. I think they wanted a candidate really, really bad, and apparently this guy's got some money, so it takes a lot of money to do a statewide race. So I think, he got enough, you know, he didn't score 100 on the Tea Party test, if there were such a thing, but I think he scored higher, and he's willing to go for it. So I think, in a way, I think the Tea Party's settling a little bit. I hate to say that, but I do think they're settling.
I think the Tea Party's settling a lot because, quite frankly,
yeah.
You know, the Tea Party has been anti-Obama and anti-big government and anti-big taxes and all the other stuff forever. They chastised Obama for the bailouts that him and George Bush put together for the banks. George Bush got it passed right before he left office, but Obama wrote the checks.
Yep.
So, you know, we've got all of this going on in play, and here you've got a guy, you just mentioned Matt Bevin has money. Well, he may have money, but if he has money of his own, why did he have to take a $100,000 bailout from the Connecticut Democrat government last year, which is where his family business is located at, and he's the president of his family business in Connecticut. He is not a Kentuckian. He wasn't born and raised here. He moved here in the late 90s to run an investment firm. If he's making all of that money, why didn't he invest his own money in rebuilding his daggone company instead of telling the government, I need a handout? So I don't buy the whole bit with the Tea Party. I think
conflict there. And then, of course, you know, like you say, another conflict is, and I have a lot of friends in finance. And they know how I feel about finance because of the largest bailouts of all were the finance industry. I mean, the brokerage industry, the hedge fund industry, anything to do with finance is it's the largest net recipient of bailouts in the history of mankind.
And Matt Bevin is an investment guy.
Yep. So, I mean, there are some contradictions there, but I think, Mitch is simply not Tea Party, and I think Matt Bevin has, you know, at least some Tea Party creds, so they're going with it.
I see this guy as having no Tea Party creds whatsoever. I see this guy as having no conservative creds whatsoever, largely because he has palled around and played with the Democrats in Connecticut for years and years and years, wanted them to give him a government bailout, and they did. There is no Tea Partier I know of, real Tea Partier that I know of, that would agree with anything that Bevin has done over the years. Not one damn thing that would lend them to the degree that he would be small government.
I can tell you right off, after they had the, you know, the initial collapse and they did the stimulus money, we got a few phone calls in our business from, you know, people, I don't know, some kind of middlemen that were, you know, the governor's association or mayor, you know, if you need assistance, we're here for you. And I basically told them to kiss my ass. You know what? If I need a little bit of money, I'm not taking it with all the conditions that it comes with from you. And I said, and besides, I'd have to be on, the company'd have to be on life support before I'd take a penny of government money. Only government money I get is when I overpay taxes.
Yeah, like that happens a lot with you. I agree, and that's the whole thing. There's nothing here about this that makes sense, other than the fact that somebody had been paid off and co-opted within the Tea Party to try to prop this guy up because they want to take Mitch McConnell out, and they're willing to sell out the power. And it don't matter if you like Mitch McConnell or not, and I'm certainly no fan of McConnell. We've talked about him over and over on the air many, many times. But whether you like McConnell or not, he is a strong force for Kentucky. He is the Senate Minority Leader. If he says he wants something, guess what? If Kentucky needs it, he's going to get it. Do we want to go ahead and give Allison Lundigan Grimes this seat? Because that's exactly why Matt Bevin is there. He doesn't. If he's got money, he didn't need a government bailout. And if he don't have money, then somebody's funding him to force Mitch McConnell to spend all his time trying to defend himself against the attacks that are going to come from Bevin instead of focusing on Allison Lundigan Grimes, which is going to eat up the money advantage that he has. And screw the masses. So it doesn't matter whether you like Mitch or not, but this guy is nothing more than a Democratic plant, in my opinion. And I think that his history proves that. And we've got more. Man, you know, this is turning into the Democrat show, Ed. From Barbara Shanklin to this idiot Matt Bevin. Now we've got a national idiot on the radar as well. Anthony Weiner. See, I knew that would make you laugh. You never know where I'm going, but I knew that would make you laugh. Anthony Weiner is on the radar again. And what's so fascinating, we have news stories out that Anthony Weiner is out there showing his wiener once again on the internet to other women. Now, he went out today and tried to say that, you know, this is the past. You know, he's already apologized for all this stuff. But he resigned Congress in 2011 when he apologized for all of this. The latest claims and the evidence says that Anthony Weiner continued from June of 2012, not 2011, folks, June of 2012 through November of 2012, was carrying on the same behavior with even more women over the internet. So he didn't learn anything. His apology wasn't sincere. He didn't learn a damn thing. But this time he thought it would be pretty cool. This time, instead of using his real name, Anthony Weiner, he used an alias. Fox News is reporting that he used an alias called Carlos Danger. So that was the alias he used when he was emailing pictures of his penis, through his Yahoo account. This guy is actually leading the polls in New York. What gives with this?
He was a pistol, and I'll give it that. He was a hell of a liberal pistol when he was going. But I don't even know where to go with it. I look at it and I think, oh my God! You know, we've spoken to politicians before. They get the bug. They get knocked out. They want back in the club. They get addicted. The power is addictive. And, I mean, to me, it's almost like he's a sociopath. It's like he was a congressman, and damn it, he wants that power back. Doesn't want to go out. He's a lawyer. Doesn't want to go out and do some lawyering or, you know, arguing in court or contract work or nothing. No, he wants that power back, and he's willing to humiliate his family and humiliate himself to get that power. And, I mean, to me, that is just – that's terrifying. That really
see,
is.
I want,
that,
see, this is
that terrifies me, because at that point I'm thinking this guy he has some sociopathic tendencies. He's singular. It's like a singular vision that he wants to be. He wants power, and he's going to get it. And he doesn't care who he humiliates, up to and including himself. He just doesn't care, and he thinks people should look at his transgressions that would get most people divorced and fired. And he wants us to look past that because he wants the power so bad. He's probably rationalized, and apparently to a degree correctly, that the people are willing to look past that. And it's like, oh.
Well, it's fascinating because.
No, it's 10 million people in New York City. Come on, pick somebody a little better.
But what's the real deal? But what's the real deal here? And that's the thing. I tell you what the real deal is. Wiener couldn't have been so stupid or so trusting that he didn't think that was going to come out. He's not an idiot, or he would have never obtained what he has obtained in this world, in this world, if he was that naive. He's not naive. I mean, this is a guy who clearly is in your face, it's all about me, deal with it mentality. But what's fascinating here is, you know, you look at New York, and let's talk about New York. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton. Let's talk about New York seriously, all right? Everybody is out there today in the mainstream media and everybody else is saying poor Huma Abedin, Anthony Weiner's wife. She's using the Hillary Clinton thing and standing by her man and God, you know, all this other stupid stuff. Here's the thing. Just a month ago, or a month and a half ago, back in May, Huma Abedin came under fire for not consulting, you know, and telling people how much income she earned on her financial report, which is required. She did not disclose what she was doing on the side. That's interesting because Huma Abedin has been propped up by John McCain and everybody else, but Huma Abedin has real ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, and part of what she was doing on the side as a second job, if you will, involved her doing work with a company called Teneo, T-E-N-E-O. What she did from June of 2012 to February 2013 is she was working with these guys part-time, aside from her job with Hillary and everything else. She was working with these guys part-time on the side. Teneo is a global strategic consulting firm. She was paid to get political intelligence on clients. Now, since she was an insider to the government working for Hillary Clinton, she's got all these Muslim Brotherhood connections. She's tied to Muslim Brotherhood terrorists. This was a major deal. Define political intelligence for clients and how many secrets she gave clients and to Neo based on her insider knowledge. That's a huge deal, one that had to be disclosed. But now we've got to find some way to take the heat off of her because that's too close to Hillary Clinton, who is a Muslim Brotherhood in-law, if you will. And we're back to New York. We got to have New York, man. New York is going to elect Hillary for president. There's no doubt about that, regardless of everything that the Clintons are about. So they've got to take the focus off of the Muslim Brotherhood because that's going to be a severe focus coming up in the next election. So they put it back on Anthony Weiner. How much was he paid to take the fall? To take the heat off of Abedin and Hillary Clinton? Comments?
Well, could be. I'm not willing to go that. I'm willing to say, look, you know, the guy was weird enough and about himself enough that he thought people would like to see the Wiener. So he sent it out, you know. I think the guy is just ate up with himself. I think he's so ate up with himself that he looks at something like this as a minor transgression that people should look past because, and he certainly hoped to do because I think he wants back in the power. He was a congressman and he doesn't like, maybe he's doing a little grunt work or you know, doing some nice boring meetings and not have anybody kiss his ass like he's the mayor or a congressman or something. He wants it back.
But you know, I mean, you know, I don't buy it that easy. You don't go out and do something stupid like that in that short of amount of a time frame after a national public humiliation, and you're going to bring down part of the Democratic Party with you and get humiliated like that, you don't go out and make that same mistake twice, even using an alias, that quick. I mean, you're talking about a matter of months that he was already back in action. I just don't buy that. I think that defies human nature. I really do. I don't care. I don't care how, you know, narcissistic you are or anything else, or how power hungry you are or anything. I don't buy that. But I do know that all these things always tie in to something that has to do with the big picture. And the Democrats are notorious for duck, dodge, and deflect, as Obama, Eric Holder, and everybody else have proven to us. So I think it's really interesting when you look at the connections with Huma Abedin and how much they're trying to protect Hillary Clinton and everything else. I mean, you know, it's fascinating because we've even got John McCain, John Boehner, Mike Rogers, who's, you know, he's on the Select Committee on Intelligence. He chairs it. These are the Republicans who have been out there standing up for Huma Abedin just last year. You know, and they know many things. They know that Huma Abedin is part of the Muslim Brotherhood program. There's no doubt about that. Her mom is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood's Division for Women. It's called the Muslim Sisterhood. Okay? Her mom herself is out there advocating Sharia law, that women should be oppressed. Even though John McCain disagrees with that, Huma Abedin is off the hook for that. But how does that tie into her daughter? You can't hold the daughter accountable for the sins of the mother, right? Well, until 2008, Huma Abedin herself was a member of the Islamic organization, the Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs. When you look at the International, or the Islamic Institute of Muslim Minority Affairs, the IMMA, if you will, Huma Abedin was the assistant editor from 1996 to 2008. When she hooked up with Clinton, they had to get rid of that. They had to hide that. Okay? The IMMA, you know, was started in the 70s by her parents. They had the backing of Abdullah Omar Nassif. Nassif is the former Secretary General of the Muslim World League. All right? That's the Muslim Brotherhood's, you know, principal place for the international propagation of the Islamic supremacist ideology. So you can't sit here and do this. And you can find this all over the internet, folks. Just do an internet search on her. You can find everything you want and look at any source you want. So she is definitely tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. She's definitely tied to the Sharia law mindset. She's definitely been involved with that for many, many years. And all of a sudden it got scrubbed when she went to work with Hillary Clinton back in 1996. And now that all that's coming back up again, we've got to have a distraction because she's too close to Clinton, who we want to run for president in 2016. Look out. Bam. Here you go. So Anthony Weiner gets caught again. I don't think there's anything coincidental about that, Ed. Am I wrong?
Again, I hope you're wrong. I certainly hope the politicians haven't come up with some sort of John Grisham stuff like that. For now, I just happen to think the guy is a narcissist. I think he's just one seriously ate-up narcissist that can't help himself. I just, you know, he's like a sex offender. He can't, you know, in spite of what he tries, he just, you know, or a gambling addict or an alcoholic or a drug
right.
addict. He's got to keep going back for, you know, one more, you know, like, you just got to go back for one more time. This is going to be the one. Whatever it is you're looking for, this next time is going to that's going to be it. I just think he's just that ate up. I really do.
Well, I hope you're right, but my experience dealing with Democrats on a local and state level tells me that that's naive thinking. And I'm not saying that you're naive, my friend. I know better. What I'm saying is though that naive thinking, based on my personal experience, the investigations and everything else I've done with local and state politicians, primarily Democrats, right now.
Normally, I would agree with you, but this guy is so off the hook as far as how ridiculous is they, you know, how you know. Usually, when you have a narcissist and there's something involved, there's something to be gained from it. Initially, when he's a congressman and starts going behaving like that, he gained nothing from it. So, I think he's just ate up and he's willing to risk. You know, or maybe he perceives that he's not risking it, that he can get away with it. But he's willing to risk whatever for the thrill of you know, taking another run at it, whatever it is.
I understand. I just can't go down that road. I don't trust that road. I've been there too many times and been disappointed. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, I want to talk about the Trayvon Martin Family World Tour and the millions of dollars that they're raising to benefit themselves. So stick around, folks. You ain't seen nothing yet. Welcome to the Ed Spencer Show. We'll be right back.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Spencer of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities.
Don Henley, of course, singing Leave. I tell you, you're back at the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. And I tell you, Mr. Martin, we have talked so much. And first, I want to apologize to our audience because we said we were going to talk about this Detroit bankruptcy thing tonight. We really don't have enough time to do it justice. We'll get into some of that tomorrow night.
In all fairness, as with bankruptcies, they're not going to do it like the GM bankruptcy. They're going to do this bankruptcy right. And at least, that's what I said. I give credit to the judge for that. You got the creditors. They're all going to have to line up and work this thing out. So it's actually got some playing out to do before we can actually comment beyond speculation of what's going on. So we'll get it another day. Trust us, people. We will get it another day. We're not going to let that one go.
Well, we really won't. That's just one of the things we do. But it's fascinating. I will probably, get into some of it tomorrow night. I do the show solo on Wednesday nights till Dale Gillespie gets back. And I talked with Dale earlier today, folks, by the way, for those of you guys who follow the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show, we've been trying to cover for the last few weeks for him. Dale will be back August the 7th in about 2 weeks. So, you can gear up for that, get ready for that. It's pretty interesting what's going on with this whole Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman thing. Now, rather than focus for the next few minutes on whether you agreed with the jury's verdict or not, because nobody's going to agree on that, it was fascinating to me is what's really happened with the Martin family itself. And I say that for a reason. They've started a thing called Trayvon, TrayvonMartin.com or something like that. I'll find it for you in a second. But anyway, bottom line is, Brandy Greene was the girlfriend of Trayvon Martin's dad, Tracy Martin. And, you know, she's no longer his girlfriend. And we're starting to wonder why. So anyway, I'm going around, I'm digging around the internet, trying to find out what happened. I mean, these guys were so close. Trayvon was going to be there. Now all of a sudden they're not. Why would a girl leave a dad in such a devastating time? You know, and anyway, when you started doing the research, you started looking at all these other things. Turns out Tracy Martin, Trayvon's dad, was a truck driver and quit his job. Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon Martin's mother, has quit as a housing counselor, and they now have a full-time job. Their full-time job is what conservativetreehouse.com, and I'll use their quote on this, they call it a full-time career in bereavement exploitation, and I tell you why. The Martin's parents have decided to open up this nonprofit charity work, supposedly, set up the Trayvon Martin Memorial Foundation. Supposedly it's going to do good so other people don't have to do this. But it's interesting. Al Sharpton, of course, is involved in this. They've got a guy by the name of Walter Sutton who is actually supposedly running this. You know, what's interesting here is I honestly believe that this was set up from the very beginning as a money-making opportunity. No, I don't think that Trayvon was killed intentionally so his parents could profit. But at the same time, one thing that's always puzzled me about this when it comes to his parents and their reactions was immediately when Trayvon was killed, the first thing his mom did was go out and trademark anything that had to do with his name so that she could get paid. What does that say?
Well, now, we discussed that way back when it happened. Now, to a degree, I actually agree with what she did. Because, you know, as we see around Louisville, as you see in any city, it's not on a national level like it is right now, but you see it when somebody gets shot, you know, somebody starts printing up shirts or something. Or hell, when somebody wins a national basketball title or a big football, you know, you got your license printers, the ones that are controlled, and then you got the ones in the back room doing it. I can see where she wanted to control that because this was her son's image. It was probably pictures that they were probably her pictures. And, you know, I could see where somebody doesn't want, whether they're looking for their own profit or whether they're looking to simply ensure that somebody else doesn't just go hog crazy and profit off of the death of your son. So I can absolutely see trademarking it and copyrighting and all that on the pictures and the name and because even though she's done it, I'm sure there's a lot of bootlegging going on, and some people are profiting from it. So I can see that. I'll just go that far. As far as trademarking it, if something terrible happened to me or any of my kids, I would probably seek to do that, if nothing else, just to control, you know, to be able to legally control how the image was being put out there and who was putting it out there.
You know, for me, though, and I can see part of that argument. I really can. But for me, as quickly as that happened is disturbing. I mean, and Trayvon wasn't even buried yet. I mean, that's how fast they did this. You know, and it's like, as a parent, you know, I'm supposedly grieving my child. The first thing I think about is how I can make money from it. That just doesn't make sense to me. There were some serious dysfunctional dynamics with this family.
We know that.
Leads
up to it. I mean, the minute his image goes out, and who knows, maybe they saw where somebody was printing up and profiteering, and maybe it was getting out of control quickly in the local area. It's entirely possible that a lawyer on the ball, a good lawyer, could have come up to him and says, you know what, you don't have to do anything. I'm going to take care of this, but this thing could get big. You need to get control of your son's legacy. He said, I'll take care of all the paperwork. You sign some papers. We'll get this thing copyrighted. We'll make sure that everything from the new Black Panthers to the KKK, that nobody's profiting from your loss. I'm not saying she was actively involved. She could have had a lawyer come up and say, look, I'm some guy that was good at the game, and that would be a good lawyer. And just said, look, I'm going to take care of this for you. This looks like it's going to get big. You need to get control of this. I'll help you.
Well, I just find it disturbing, and I tell you why, because, you know, one of the places they went to, they recently went to Birmingham, Alabama. Now they're in London, England. They went to Birmingham, Alabama, and, of course, they're going through all the breakfast and everything else where you get all these church collections and all the other stuff. You know, they're making money on this, a lot of money on this. Rumor has it, you know, I mean, they've already been paid $1 million from the Neighborhood Association. That's public record. Rumor has it they're getting millions more going on this poor Trayvon tour. You know, and they're the only directors of this. It's being run by a guy by the name of Walter Sutton. But what's really interesting about Walter Sutton is Walter Sutton has filed, he's as the chairman of Trayvon Martin Memorial Foundation, after he announced his candidacy for office. You know, he is running for office on the Florida 17th Congressional District. You know, and now he's running for office based on the Trayvon Martin legacy, I guess. I don't know. And it's really interesting because if you go to the link that I just put in the chat room, folks, you're going to see the handwritten letter from Sutton. It's handwritten, talking about how, you know, he is a Democrat and he wants to be officially submitted as candidate for U.S. Congress. You know, he couldn't even fill out a proper application. This is really disturbing to me because these guys are filling their coffers quickly. Going around the country, taking money from good, hardworking people who otherwise really can't afford it, you know, and traveling worldwide to say, you know, we feel, you know, our kid got killed. Now, that might not sound like a whole big deal to a lot of people. It may sound like too much of a deal I'm making of it. I don't know. But I find it interesting. And when you go to the Trayvon Martin Foundation, you're going to see on there, you know, everything. It's a not-for-profit organization, as I mentioned. It's falling under the Miami Foundation, and folks, you need to look at the Miami Foundation. This foundation's supposed purpose is to create awareness of violent crime and how it impacts families and victims and things like that, and supports and advocacy, all that good stuff. But pay attention to what they really do, and pay attention to the people they help. You're going to see yet another way, another scam to get money. And I really, for me, you know, I really have a problem with everything they're talking about on here on Trayvon. You know, they're making it look like this kid was an altar boy and everything else. He loves sports, repairing his bikes, horseback riding. You know, at the time he was killed, he had a bright future ahead of him. He was going to go to college and become an aviation mechanic. It's the same old garbage line, all right? Nobody wants to portray Trayvon the right way, and when you do that kind of stuff, you're leading people to believe that something is not what it is. So people who really can't afford the money are going out there and funding the Martins based on lies. This much we do know, Ed, and I think you'll agree with this because you've read as many published reports as I have. This much we'll both agree on. Up until June of the school year that he was killed, up until June, Trayvon Martin appeared, for all indications and purposes, to be a kid who had a bright future. He was getting good grades in school, in his final year of school, going into his last one. He was living his life right. He was doing everything. But something happened over that summer. Over that summer, the turn of Trayvon bad. I don't think there's any other way to put that. I'm not talking about the shooting with George Zimmerman, folks, so don't give me the hate mail trying to say I'm trying to justify Zimmerman's shooting. I'm not. What I'm trying to point out here is Trayvon was not the innocent little victim. In June of 2011, going into that summer, Trayvon was doing everything you want your kid to do. He was going to school, getting good grades, wasn't in trouble, hadn't had the problems. As soon as he started school in September, though, he was always in trouble, suspended, liked to fight, liked to do drugs. He sold drugs. He didn't have a problem, you know, bragging about having a gun at 17 years old. And he was out of control so bad that his mom sent him to his dad to raise him. Now, what happened here was clearly obvious. Trayvon got addicted to drugs. I don't think there's any doubt about that. A kid doesn't just go bad over the course of the summer going into the next school year unless something traumatic happened or there's some kind of an alternate substance. Would you agree with that, Ed?
Yeah, and I think along the lines is, you know, like I said, I'm willing to wait and see what they do with their nonprofit and if they help people. But I think, aside from all the other questions, I think that's one of the questions, and that's one of the things that really needs to be addressed and it extends all the way to Chicago and, you know, the 11,000 other black youth that have been killed. Like, what went wrong? Because they weren't born bad. And most of them are pretty good kids. Trayvon was a good kid up to a certain point and then, you know, started having some problems. Not criminal, but, you know, it could be hormones. It could be, you know, bad friends. It could be drugs, whatever. They need to figure out, you know, they need to do everybody really needs to sit back and say, what happened to this kid with a bright future? I mean, it happens to people all the time. That's why I say you think we need to look at that and say, what happened? And you know what? And that's where the real solutions and the real work have to start. If it happened to this kid with a bright future and it just blew up and it ended, you know, tragically and you know, with a surprise, really, it was all, like we said, it's a collection of bad decisions. How did we get to that point? Let's not argue about you know, guilty, not guilty, blood spatters, broken noses, whatever. It's like, no, let's look at, you know, we can look at Trayvon and say, how did we get to that point? And we can look at the laws and say, how did they get to this point? I mean, that's where we need to be now. This trial is over. Zimmerman is in a, you know, he was found not guilty. So we need to start looking at the causal effects because there are still, you know, there are dozens of Trayvons every night getting killed in the major cities of America. We need to figure out the hell why.
Thank you. And I totally agree with you there. And, you know, and here's the hypocrisy, if you will. If you think I'm going down the wrong road by bringing up the obvious that the Martin family is profiting handsomely off the death of their son, and willingly so, I can accept that. I can accept that. I really have no problem with somebody, you know, jumping my ass for that. But this isn't about, you know, George Zimmerman shooting Trayvon. What is interesting here for me is the family is on their way to London now to talk about everything that's going on and this issue and all of that crap. They're trying to make this a world tour. But what's fascinating is Tracy Martin, Trayvon's dad, Tracy Martin, for over a year now, has fed the media and anybody that would listen, he's fed into the Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson racial hatred mindset and told the whole world that Trayvon was profiled because he was black and that was the problem. That's what he told us in the United States. So we've had all of these protests and all of these people changing sides. It is probably, and I would say highly likely, that a lot of other people, otherwise good people, or people who had a chance to change their life around were killed because of this racial hatred and mindset. But what does Tracy Martin do? He goes on in his speeches and says to the whole world, it's not about black and white. It's about right and wrong. We're trying to reach into the hearts of our nation and the international nations as well to help them understand that. Here in the U.S., he's never made a statement that it's not about black and white, that this whole case was nothing but right and wrong. He fed into the racist hatred and dialogue with Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton to continue that division. This case has never been about race. It never was from the very beginning. But now that Zimmerman has been tried, now that Zimmerman has been proven innocent through a jury, I wasn't on the jury, he's been found not guilty. Now they want to go out and say, well, this is about right and wrong. It's not really about race. Where the hell has those sentiments been for the last year that's totally divided this country? That's what I want to know.
I have no idea, but you know what? Better late than never, I guess. What you can say, it's like, okay, now that that's where we're at, you know, okay, maybe it's a little hypocritical, maybe it's a change of heart, but let's run with it. If that's where he's going now, then good, because that's the direction we need to be going. So, you know, people change course all the time, so.
I just got a real problem because right now, I mean, the emotions are basically dying down. But you can, you know, everything that anytime you get into situations like this, it's the emotions that carry you, not common sense and logic. It's the emotions that carry you. The people in this country have been dealing with this case on an emotional level, not a logical level. And that's what the whole problem has been. So for him to go out here now and try to say, well, it's never been about black and white. It's only about right and wrong. Those words coming from Trayvon's own father at the very beginning of this or sometime throughout the over a year that we've been dealing with this could have themselves saved lives. So what's the intent here? To save lives and prevent? Or is it about the money? You have to tone it down a little bit to get more money. That's my concern, and that's really, I don't think I can change my mind on that unless I'm proven wrong somewhere. So far, I just haven't seen it. Ed Martin, final thoughts, man. We are on overdrive. We need to go. Final thoughts.
Oh, Lord. Well, you know, final thoughts. Like the thread that I put up today, and if anybody wants to go to Ed Martin on Facebook and pile in, why not? 100 other people have. But like I said,
I'm guilty.
The verdict is behind us. Trayvon is buried. George Zimmerman's life is ruined. I think now is where we do. Now is where we, you know, we need to get around to the healing process. And so part of the healing is like you said, let's calm now. Let's calm down and not make it all about emotion. Yes, it was a tragedy. I mean, we can all accept that, you know, and casting blame on Zimmerman or some blame on Martin. It doesn't amount to anything. Now it's time to go forward. You know, there's a problem. And now's when we look at it, since, like I said, what happened with Trayvon? And can we stop that from happening to another kid? And then, like the post I started up, it's like, you know, we also maybe need to take a look at some of the laws and tweak them. You know, danger ground, not a bad law. No, it didn't apply in this case, but not bad. You know, self-defense laws. Yeah, they could stand a little tweaking. The regulations or laws surrounding neighborhood patrols. I would say they probably need to be, you know, rethought and have some new parameters put in to, you know, from everything from a person being followed by a neighborhood or confronted by a neighborhood patrol person up to and including the police. I mean, I would be interested to know if any neighborhood patrol guys got gunned down by police because they look like everybody else. You know, we need to look at all the aspects of this, all the things that went wrong, and say, you know what, can we do, you know, this better? Can we, there's a lot of factors, and I think we can do everything better. I think there's room for improvement in every aspect of this case, whether it's the way the police handled it, the way the laws are written, the way citizens on patrol are regulated or trained, and up to and including maybe drug interdiction or counseling services increased for kids that obviously seem to be on an upward trajectory and then go flat in, you know, over one summer. I think everything needs to be looked at.
And I totally agree with you. And it's what I want to do and what I would really like to do, and we're not going to be able to do that because people, again, they're still dealing on an emotional level. And that emotional level skyrocketed thanks to the race baiters and haters like Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and Trayvon Martin's dad, Tracy Martin. I have to include him in that because as the father of a murdered child, I cannot even begin to fathom what that felt like. And I pray that I'll never have to feel that kind of pain. However, you know, now that the jury has spoken, now we're going out preaching a different message. The message is that, you know, this is about right and wrong, not black and white. But because they allowed that racial divide to go on, we just set America back another few years on trying to move forward. Thank goodness most black and white understand that this wasn't about race. But unfortunately, the smallest minds still believe that, and they'll still continue to profit from that, and they'll still continue to divide people over that. And probably, in my estimation, someone will die because of that small-mindedness, and already has. When you look at Trayvon Martin, what I want to do, and I wish we could do, and I wish the media would get off of their single agenda and focus on white guilt all the time. I have no white guilt, folks. I'm not the problem in the black community. I'm not the problem with the drugs on the street in the white or the black community. You know, but I want them to go back to June of 2011. I want the media, and I want mainstream, and I want anybody and everybody listening to this show to go back to June of 2011. Take a look at everything you can find publicly. And up until June of 2011, Trayvon Martin was a good kid who had a bright future ahead of him. According to his English teacher, he was an A and B student. You know, so this guy had a future ahead of him. But something turned him. When we look at the autopsy report and the liver damage to Trayvon Martin at such a young age of 17, when we look at the Arizona watermelon drink that he got, not the Arizona iced tea, the media keeps trying to force feed down us, and we look at the Skittles and we realize that you add that to Robitussin, it's called lean. It creates a sensation that's close to liquid codeine. Trayvon Martin had liver problems, disease, that was traced back to that. The ingredients that he went to the store to buy were to make that drug, because he, sometime between June of 2011 and February of 2012, when he was killed, he went down a dark road. That dark road is what put him and George Zimmerman face to face that night. Where could that have been prevented at? Now, you can blame George Zimmerman and everything else for shooting Trayvon Martin, but I got news for you. If somebody had knocked me on the ground and stood on top and sat on top of me and was pounding my head into the concrete, in today's world, I am 99.9% sure that person wasn't going to stop until I was unconscious or dead. Period. You've got to defend.
Well, you've got a big head. They're going to have to hit on you for a while. You know?
Well, we know that. But, you know, you've got to understand that. Trayvon Martin disappeared for over 4 minutes. Experts testified to that. When George Zimmerman turned around, Trayvon Martin hit him in the nose and knocked him to the ground and then proceeded to beat his head into the pavement. At that point, as soon as Trayvon blindsided George Zimmerman, he became the aggressor. He threw the first punch. Nobody's disputing that. The evidence shows that. What happened to Trayvon Martin from June of 2011 until the night he was killed by George Zimmerman to make him aggressive and angry and everything else that would lead him to make a decision like that? We know George Zimmerman was a cop wannabe. We know he was an accident waiting to happen. That's a given. I'm not defending George Zimmerman. But Trayvon Martin was a 17-year-old kid who had a bright future. But because of some choices that were made, that his parents didn't do their job helping him through, they're now profiting from that, and he's dead. I want to know how to prevent it. And we got to go back to June of 2011 to find that answer. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, I will be here as usual. Give us a call tomorrow night, man. We'll have an open line, and we'll probably get into some more of this stuff, because God knows it ain't going to go away. You know, in the meantime, Mr. Martin, have a great week. Tune in tomorrow if you can, man. I'd love to have you on air with us.
All right. You
know, short of that, folks, have a great night. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.